Hey everybody, welcome to the Deep Dive. I'm Paul, that's Ian. And in our idiosyncratic deep dive sort of way, we're going to tackle a big issue with respect to college football that I think is going to be more pervasive and even more interesting as college football becomes more NFLized, whether you want it or not. It's coming and it's happening. But before that, I want you to join Inside Texas for the best conversation about Texas sports that you can find on the damn internet. That's right, I said it. Join Inside Texas today. $1 for 4 months. That is phenomenal. If my math was not failing me, I would estimate that it's something like 6.5 cents a week for the next 4 months. I think that's worth your time. Go through your couch change, go through your couch cushions, and make that commitment. I think you'll be really happy with that investment of one single measly American dollar to get the best damn Texas content that you could find. Also, another place you could find great Texas content is where, Ian?
On this YouTube channel.
On this YouTube channel. So we'd like all of you to like and subscribe. Hammer that subscribe button. Pound that like button. I think I hit the key action words that you're supposed to use when you're a minor YouTube personality, as I am. But no minor YouTube personality is joining me. The esteemed Ian Boyd, my partner in crime. Some call him Robin to my Batman, though he thinks he's Batman, which is amusing. All right, Ian, talk to me, man. Let's talk about the growth and role of the GM in modern college football. This is a job position that began a while back, and we called it what? Do you recall?
The Director of Player Personnel.
The DPP. Are you down with DPP? Yeah, you know me is the callback. DPPs. So Directors of Player Personnel, as we realized that recruiting was paramount, that it was becoming much more sticky in terms of time and obligations and planning. Believe it or not, there's some coaches that began to pioneer in this area and create entire substructures of their program dedicated solely to player personnel. They were called DPPs, Directors of Player Personnel. You know who basically started it, Ian?
I mean, I did not know this until you researched it earlier, but it's who everyone would guess.
The GOAT, Nick Saban. So Nick Saban starts it. Urban Meyer, unsurprisingly, is a very fast follower in this regard. So Florida got on board with this very quickly. And I think you saw their programs benefit over the years from a much more sophisticated approach to player personnel. That has only increased with the portal. Because now, Ian, not only do you have to evaluate high school talent, but you need to evaluate peer talent. In other words, other college teams. Who do you want in that portal? And so this group has only grown in size and scope. Do you have any basic thoughts on the contrast between the NFL model of a GM and at this point, the DPP? What are the main differences in contrast?
The big one is that the DPP works at the pleasure of the head coach.
Yes.
That's the big difference that we're going to get into a few different layers of that today. I will note, Urban Meyer's DPP, they started recruiting super well at Florida, but they were recruiting murderers and kind of went astray. And I'd say
you sound like Norm MacDonald there for a second. You're like, yeah, when they were recruiting murderers at Florida. That's no good.
We adjusted in Ohio State. They did a lot better. When Tom Herman came to Texas, he brought some of Urban Meyer's people's assistants to mimic that structure at Texas. Didn't serve Texas super well either, honestly. And when Texas was trying to hire Urban Meyer to replace Tom Herman, allegedly the sticking point was that Urban could not convince his DPP and his strength coach to leave Ryan Day at Ohio State and come to Texas. Because they were like, that's great. Go with God if you want to go to Texas, but we got a great thing going here still. Why would we work to rebuild everything?
In terms of power, there are variations in the NFL. Of course, Bill Belichick was the closest thing to a college coach to the NFL, meaning absolute power answered directly to Bob Kraft. There was no one in the building that told Bill Belichick what to do. Fair? I think Pete Carroll, similar situation, didn't flex quite as much on that. But when he was with the Seahawks, he was partnered with their GM, I think, amicably. But I think ultimately Pete was probably calling the shots. But in most NFL situations, Ian, your GM either exists as a co-equal, and if you study any Roman history, there's no such thing as a true co-equal. One person becomes primary one way or another. Or the head coach is actually a little, how dare you? For those of you just listening on podcast form, audio form, Ian dared to suggest that we had that relationship. Let's be very clear about Julius Caesar is, and let's be very clear about who Crassus is here, Ian. But
you're the old Crassus and I'm young.
No, I'm Julius Caesar. But in the NFL, most of the time, the head coach is more or less, whether it shows it on the org chart or not, subordinate to the GM. Is that fair?
Yeah. Is Kyle Shanahan seems like he has.
He is subordinate to no man.
Yeah.
John Lynch works for Kyle Shanahan.
Yeah.
And I don't care what the org chart says.
Right. But yeah, I think the most extreme version of this and the most successful version in the NFL right now is Howie Roseman with the Philadelphia Eagles.
He is clearly above the head coach is a middle manager in the Eagles
world. The head coach, yeah. Howie Roseman hired his assistants for this last season. He's like, this is not going to cut it. I'll tell you what, you can stay, but Vic Fangio is your defensive coordinator. And I don't remember who their offensive coordinator is, but he was another external hire. And you're going to run the tush push and all these, you know, Roseman is the king in Philadelphia.
You nailed it. That's a great pull. There is no better exemplification of the God King GM than Howie Roseman. And I'm not exaggerating when I say the head coach in Philadelphia is a middle manager in that organization. By the way, that was Billy Beane's vision of a baseball manager. Major League Baseball managers didn't like that vision of Billy's. They didn't like that Billy would tell them how they were going to incorporate analytics into the game. They didn't like it when Billy would trade the player that they insisted on starting over a promising young prospect. But ultimately, he made it very clear, you're a middle manager. You're not running the vision of this program. And I think that's an evolution that, frankly, has taken seed in Major League Baseball as well. Is that fair?
Yeah, and in NBA basketball.
And in the NBA, for good NBA and for bad.
For NBA basketball, it may be the most pronounced.
And often the most
star players wield more power than the head coaches. And so the head coaches are like, your job, it's like when they tell Michael Scott why the salespeople are allowed to boss him around. And he's like, I'm the manager. And they're like, you are in charge. You are in charge of supporting the sales team.
Yes. Servant leadership, Ian.
Servant leadership.
So interestingly, the other contrast to all this is not only was Nick Saban in his prime at Alabama the master of football in all aspects, and everyone reported to him. I don't care what the org chart at Alabama said. Nick Saban was above the AD as well.
Yeah.
And so I think we're seeing a shift there and something of a power grab, not only by ADs, but also people external to the immediate athletic department. And we're seeing that with this new model of GMs. So that's our intro. That's the history of all this. And then we're going to talk about where this is all going. But before that, I want to talk about where you're going with your new home purchase or your refi. Where you're going is 832-557-1095. Those are phone numbers. And Ian is trying to laugh because he's in awe of the quality and power of my transitions.
Yeah.
Robin can't do that, folks. That's a Batman-level transition. You need to be seriously scarred as a young man watching your parents be killed to really make that kind of transition as Batman was. Mortgages by Gabe Winslow. You can reach him at 832-557-1095. Why call Gabe? Over 20 years in the industry, has a law degree, absolutely fantastic at what he does. Of course, he's a University of Texas graduate, and he's a maniac about Texas sports like all of us. But what he's really enthused about, what he's really a lunatic about, is realizing your dream of home ownership or structuring your current ownership of a home into the best optimal financial situation with perhaps a timely refi. So give Gabe a call, find out what he can do for you, and join the hundreds of raving five-star Google reviews, of paragraphs after paragraph talking about Gabe's amazing problem solving and his amazing customer service and his, yes, servant leadership. 832-557-1095. So, Ian, should we talk about Jim Nagy and Andrew Luck?
Let's start with Luck.
Let's start with Luck. We should always start with Luck.
He's kind of the front and center of this right now. I think we both think Oklahoma is going to take more headlines in this department in the coming seasons. But for now, Andrew Luck is like the exemplar of GMs in college football seizing power in a coup d'etat.
Yes.
And changing the governance structure of college football.
So some recent evidence of the coup d'etat. Andrew Luck, the GM of Stanford football, fired the head coach for, we think, abusive relationships with their employees. We'll see. I lived in the Bay Area for 18 years. It all trends a little hysterical out there at times, so we'll see how that pans out. In any event, Troy Taylor's out of a job.
God bless you for saying that. How many people would have been afraid to even say that much?
Yeah, well.
It may be real, but God forbid we consider that maybe it's a little bit, we don't know.
We don't know. So I'll reserve judgment on that. But what's more interesting and more evident to our point is that Andrew Luck made this call. The Stanford AD's name is not even associated with this. And so we did a little digging, Ian, and what we found out is that Andrew Luck's power is not just above the head coach. This guy has carved out effectively a fiefdom as the dictator of Stanford football. So not only is Andrew Luck, not only did the coaching staff report to him, but he's in charge of player personnel. He's in charge of the roster, but he's also the equivalent of the president of football at Stanford, meaning he's responsible for fundraising, alumni relations, NIL. What are those tasks typically reserved to? Who usually does that?
Normally, that'd be the athletic director.
Yeah.
The head coach in some capacity as well.
And who does Andrew Luck report to?
The president of the university.
He doesn't report to the AD. He has an alternate org line that bypasses the guy that you would think could be his boss, and he talks directly to the president. No opportunity for mischief there, huh, Ian?
Yeah, he doesn't even have to text 911 to the president to get him to call him back. It's just trying to make another Office reference here. Your face is giving me nothing.
I'm trying to give you stuff, but I can only give so much, Ian. I only watch the British Office. It's the more superior of the two. Thank you.
Okay.
Commitment. So the point is, Andrew Luck has a title that we've seen before, but he has levels, he has powers that we've never seen invested in that position. He is the de facto runner of Stanford football. And then the further proof of this is, who did they hire once they got rid of Troy Taylor?
Frank Reich, his old guy from back in his Indianapolis days.
To a one-year contract. So I don't know what's going on there. I don't know what's happening, but Stanford, be very clear, Andrew Luck runs Stanford football. And we've never seen anything like this before.
Yeah, this is, as far as we can recall, we've never seen anyone with this sort of position or power in college football. Like Andrew Luck suddenly and almost inexplicably has at Stanford. But there's another program near and dear to our hearts with a very similar structure emerging. With the hire, not even with the hire of Jim Nagy, the new general manager of Oklahoma, but the greater organizational shuffle that's been taking place up there in Norman for the last year. And do you want me to outline it real quick?
Yeah, bring it on, man.
The first thing they did was Randall Stephenson, the former CEO of AT&T.
Chairman,
not well reviewed. First time there, by the way. he becomes a volunteer, unpaid position in charge of helping to better equip the Pro Football program for the NIL era. Very quickly, Brent Venables, general manager, is more of a DPP. Curtis Lofton, his former linebacker from the aughts, is kind of shunted aside and then eventually just resigns and bails. Then they hire Jim Nagy, who was an NFL scout for a long time, and he's been directing the Senior Bowl for the last at least half decade.
I can't remember.
And the best part, as soon as they were doing this, they're like, we're going to have a general manager who really runs things like an NFL front office. You're like, really? Like, in the NFL, like, he can hire and fire the coach? Like, he makes the draft picks? Like that? Or more like just a DPP? And then in their press release, Jim Nagy reports to who, Paul?
He reports to two gentlemen, Joe Castiglione, the AD of OU Sports, longtime AD, longtime successful AD, and this guy, Randall Stephenson, who's external, doesn't even have an official capacity in OU athletics. That's who he reports to. Shadow director. Not Brent Venables.
Not Brent Venables. Brent Venables also reports to
Castiglione.
And
Stephenson?
Stephenson.
Wow.
So you immediately, if you were going to bring in the Bobs, they would ask Castiglione, what would you say you do here?
Yeah. Basketball?
Basketball?
Softball?
Yeah, I've heard from one source, I don't know if this is universally true, but one source inside the athletic department I heard from once upon a time did not seem to think Castiglione was really all that with it on the other sports. Now, maybe that's not true, but this wasn't like a janitor. So it's worth taking in, what exactly does that guy even do in Norman anymore, except for wear fedoras and make statements that sort of sound like he might be in charge?
Well, I think what's interesting is beyond him, Brent Venables, because...
Well, yeah, that's the
main... So one thing that's very interesting, and you note, is last time I checked, OU has four commitments right now, four recruits. That is the antithesis of how Venables was trying to run things in recruiting.
Yeah.
OU was very much a let's mobilize the whole staff. And I mean, they would take the whole staff and go visit a recruit sometimes to make an impression on him. Like, they'd go to his high school and there'd be like nine Sooner coaches and they'd press for an early commitment. And the idea was like, let's get up the recruiting rankings fast. Let's create momentum. Let's create a sense that appeals to the fans, that we're on top of things. Jim Nagy has put a screeching halt on all of that activity. And I think his basic contention is, hey, you're bringing in guys ultimately that don't prove to be as good as you think they are. Or maybe they're a little bit overhyped and they're not actually performing. As Texas fans, I think we understand what that feels like under the old Mac Brown era, right? Near the very end of it, where you're trying to get momentum. And others, you're right. But, you know, you're giving guys scholarships based on their firm handshake and steely cold eye, you know, glare. So I think Nagy is in charge of this. And I got to ask you, Ian, if you are trying to appeal to future coaches, whether you're at Stanford or OU, do you want to remain the model of God King? Or do you want to go and be effectively subordinate within your own program? What's the future appeal of a school like OU? Because the thought is, if Venables goes, I think Nagy's sticking around.
This is the big question. There's a million layers to this. Now, Justin will tell you, and he's right, there are a lot of coaches in college football right now that are getting totally burnt out on the growing list of responsibilities with managing the roster.
100%.
Stark was burned by the portal opening after the playoffs, and he got a big fat extension out of it. He's like, you guys got it. That was terrible. Give me more money. So there is a chance that coaches will eventually become used to the idea of, I'm going to be a football coach, and that means that my job is going to be to coach football, to cook and not to buy the ingredients. But head coaches are also, you're also selecting from a population of men that are extremely competitive, highly energetic, and controlling.
Well, and if we want to make a positive spin on it, the best head coaches have a very specific vision of how they want to play football.
And also, here's another thing for Oklahoma in particular. What's more likely to generate an advantage for you as Oklahoma and one of 10 SEC programs with a similar payroll? Is it going to be a general manager who's amazing at finding prospects and like drafts better than everybody else, or a head coach whose system and vision gets more value out of players and allows you to select for certain traits in your recruits? Because right now, the Jim Nagy model would appear to be, I know what NFL players look like. That's been my job.
And he does.
I'm going to make sure that we do a better job than anyone else of getting NFL players. And I think that would be a better idea somewhere else than Oklahoma.
Well, let's say this. It could be the individual coach. Is it possible Brent Venables has, as demonstrated in his first 3 years, does he have actually more of a coordinator mindset?
Well, that for sure.
He doesn't mind that division of labor. Now, I do think what the coaches resent is the ultimate ceding of authority. Yes. Whether you are overwhelmed or not, what Sark would say is, hey, give me more support personnel. But I'm still in charge of these guys.
Yeah.
Like, you're not hiring a GM who's my co-equal or above me. That ain't flying at University of Texas. And I think would that fly with LSU when Brian Kelly? He would go freaking nuts. He would turn shades of purple that the human vocabulary doesn't have words for.
He'd be like, dangling the GM off the scouting tower.
That's right. So I think that this is a huge adjustment. And I'll give you an example of how this can cripple you if you are in the market for future head coaches. The Jacksonville Jaguars had a GM named Trent Baalke. If you're a 49ers fan, you'll know his history with Jim Harbaugh. Jim Harbaugh thought he was useless. He cut one of his second-round draft picks, to give you an example of what he thought of Trent Baalke's abilities. But Baalke has a very good skill set of ingratiation. And he ingratiated himself to Shad Khan, the owner of the Jacksonville Jaguars. So the Jaguars had this nice little run where they looked really promising. They got Trevor Lawrence. And it looks like the future might be bright. But they weren't supporting him very well, whether through free agency or the draft. And they kept going through coaches. And it became very clear that as Trent Baalke stayed around and the Jacksonville Jaguars kept recycling coaches, who was really in charge in Jacksonville? And what it actually came down to was that Shad Khan realized that no quality NFL coach would talk to him as long as Trent Baalke was his GM. So what did he do? He finally fired Baalke. And now the Jacksonville Jaguars have a little bit more of an equilibrium in power structure. So that's just an example.
There's another example.
Bring it.
The Dallas Cowboys, except the general manager is the owner. So you can't fire him.
Oh, God. Please tell me about it. Circa 1995, I remember thinking, this will go on forever, and the Cowboys will win 4 Super Bowls every decade for the next 30 years because Jimmy Johnson's going to the NFL Hall of Fame and surely we'd never part ways with him. And yet it all changed. But yeah, I think that's a good example. But this NFLization of the college game is going to continue, but I think it's going to continue in different forms as different schools experiment with the best model. And I'm wondering, as we close out here, Ian, is there anything, although Stanford and OU are not very similar as programs historically or even currently the value proposition that they offer, it is interesting that these two programs are the first two to make these sorts of experimentation. Why? Why is it these two? Why is it not Maryland and Ole Miss?
These two care, and these two have lost advantages they used to have before the NIL model. Stanford's model, you were closer, but as I understand it, their successful model for Harbaugh and for Shaw, for a point, was we're going to go recruit all the best football players who are also sharp minds, who have ambitions beyond for what they're going to do beyond football. We're going to bring them to Stanford, and then they are going to have a chance to network and have sort of the pitch that Texas can make, only honestly on a grand, much grander scale. And that was they had a niche for that. And then Oklahoma was just playing the game, Big Red Auto and all that, and also sheltered from some tougher competition in the Big 8 and the Big 12 spheres. And now they're both, everyone is in the NIL shark tank. No one is immune. No matter, you can go to Tennessee Chattanooga, and if you have a good player, somebody's going to come steal them for money. And Oklahoma is also in the competitive shark tank of the SEC.
Yeah. Two thoughts as we close out, Ian. One, you and I are going to have to do a deep dive on where Oklahoma football currently ranks as a job based on these changes and based on the shifting winds. Historically, anyone who argues that OU is not a top five program in terms of achievement, you're just biased, right?
Yeah.
In fact, over the last 20, 25 years, it would be hard to find a more consistent winning program. Until the recent little hiccups.
Maybe with the hire of Bud Wilkinson.
I mean, yeah, honestly. I mean, yeah. It's an incredible record of a success and achievement. So did Yale have that in the 1900s. Mm-hmm. Things change. I'm not suggesting that we're going through that level of a sea change. But if you had a bunch of coaches, and this isn't hating Texas fans, if you had a bunch of coaches sitting in a room and you had guaranteed full anonymity to discuss the best jobs in college football, I'm not sure OU's in the top 10 anymore.
Especially if they're really married to Jim Nagy and Randall Stephenson.
That's the other part, is what's the appeal? Because part of the reason you choose college football over the NFL, if you're an elite coach, is total control.
Yeah. And so Belichick's here now.
That's right. And so if you're not going to get that total control and you're at a school that may have some trouble adopting and adapting to some new headwinds, ironically enough, these new changes make Notre Dame a much more appealing job. If you and I were discussing the Irish 10 years ago, we wouldn't say it's a top 10 job in college football. If we did, we'd say it's number 10. I don't think I'd say it's number 10. I think I'd say it's like 14 or something.
Yeah.
Now it's back. Because you can pay players legally. And Notre Dame's got a lot of successful alumni like the University of Texas who care about football. So these are some things to think about. You guys might see this Andrew Luck stuff or this Jim Nagy stuff as little interesting one-offs. This tension and this development and direction of college football is going to make – it's going to make and break different programs over the next 20 to 30 years. And we'll be here documenting it. So, Ian, anything parting for the people before we say goodbye?
I my only thing with Oklahoma, I wonder if they would have, like, I think me and you, our nightmare is that they go and hire Kenny Dillingham after Brent Venables.
Yes.
But I don't think Kenny Dillingham wants to come report to Jim Nagy.
Right.
So I wonder, like, with programs like Oklahoma, I think Stanford is going to go that direction. I don't think they're going to go back to God Emperor head coaches. But Oklahoma, if they get a shot at like bringing Nick Saban back or hiring like the most, I think maybe they ditch Nagy, throw him off the schooner, and let the new head coach pick all his own people. That's going to be really interesting to watch with Oklahoma as well. It's just those politics.
100%. Well, that's been the deep dive. We hope it delivered in maybe something a little more think piecey. A little more deep stuff, but hey, it's called the deep dive. This is the kind of stuff we should be talking about the direction of college football, and certainly as it suits and pertains to our main rival. So for Ian Boyd, I'm Paul Wadlington saying, thanks for joining us.